Hi, family. My name is Stephanie. I'm an addict. Thank you. Grief and recovery. When I was asked to lead this meeting by the program convention committee, I was shocked. I wasn't shocked that they needed somebody to lead it, but that they asked me. That's always been my thing through life. You know, it's not so much that somebody, you know, needs something done, but they want me to do it. Just to give you some history, I'm an addict. I don't use no more. I could use again. You know, that's my qualification for being here. You know, we were talking about the word grief and grieving, and it's funny, I really didn't know what I was going to share, but I knew I wanted to share a little bit about the process that I've been through. And it hasn't been a lifelong process for me. I mean, who likes to think about loss? I don't like to think about things I'm not going to have, or I'll never have. And of course, that's not what I was raised with. I was raised with sacrifice. You know, you're not supposed to have it. You'll have it later, sometime, maybe. You know, I was baptized and raised Catholic. And we believe in sacrifice and the eternal after gift of whatever that is, whenever, you know. We didn't deal with dying. We didn't deal with grieving. You sucked it up. You held it in. You didn't let anybody see what was going on inside of you. As a matter of fact, you didn't miss anything you didn't have. You know, you just didn't have it. So consequently, growing up, I knew there was something lacking, but I wasn't allowed to talk about it. I didn't have any friends. I was not an only child. But I wasn't friends with my brother or sister. I wasn't friendly with my family. I didn't have the love of a mother. I had a mother, but I didn't have the love of a mother. So when I started using, it wasn't so much to fill a hole. It was to act like I was normal, whatever that was. You know, how I saw everybody else acting. Like they were okay with the way their life was and the way the world was. What happened for me was that I couldn't use enough drugs for it to be okay anymore. You know, more and more, pretty soon, either you die, you go to jail, or you go crazy. You know, I was lucky, I went crazy. And when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I found a lot of people who were struggling with the same things that I was struggling with. You know, how do we walk around on this planet acting like we don't hurt? We don't need. We don't. You know, and that's what you guys told me. You don't. You don't act like you don't need. You need. It's okay. I think I had about I had 6 years clean, and my best friend lost somebody very, very close to her. And I had never dealt with death on a personal level. And I didn't know what to say to this woman. This is my best friend. And we didn't talk for 6 months. And it wasn't because I didn't love her and that she didn't love me. I didn't know what to say to her. I knew there was nothing I could say that would make it better. And I was in a place in my recovery where I was trying valiantly to mean what I said and to say what I meant. And I had no desire to fill up space with this woman that I loved dearly. What was I supposed to tell her? That God has a plan? Was I supposed to tell her, don't worry, it's going to be all right? Because I didn't know that. You know, I had no idea if it was going to be all right or not. I did not have any idea if she was going to be able to get through this okay or not. And I didn't want to pretend. So we just didn't talk. You know, she was a smart woman. She didn't call me, you know, because she knew I didn't have a clue. And I was okay with that. You know, I really was okay, because what was important for me was that my friend took care of herself. And she did that. And after about 6 months, we talked and we realized we really didn't miss anything. You know, one of the things that I realized going through that experience was that it was all right for me to not know. See, I keep forgetting that I don't know everything. You know, I think I'm already supposed to have this answer. You know, I read in this book somewhere that everything that we do on this planet is firsthand. Nobody's ever done it before. You know, but I think that there is a book somewhere and somebody's got it hid, and I must have gotten a peek about it, because I know how to do everything, you know, and when I don't, it stymies me. So when we talked, when she and I talked and I realized what I did was okay, I felt so much better. I felt settled in myself. I felt more settled in our friendship. About 6 months after that, my aunt, who I was very, very close to, contracted leukemia. And I started going from her house to the hospital when she was in the hospital to work. I have two teenage children. I go to meetings, you know, I have a partner, so I have a life. And it was a lot, but I wanted to do it. And I wanted to do it not just because I thought I had to. I wanted to do it because I loved her. And I wanted to spend as much time with her as I could. She was very gracious in her dying. She allowed me access to her. She was not afraid. She had no problem talking about it. I don't know if I could be that gracious and that brave. We talked about everything except the biggest thing in our lives, which was that her husband had abused me when I was a child. And it wasn't until this year that I started realizing what a tremendous gift I denied her. See, I thought I was doing her a favor by not telling her what happened. And really what I was doing was, I was hiding. I was saving myself, because I had told every member of my family. And what they did was they act like either A, I'd made it up, or B, that it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. And I was afraid that if this woman that I loved very much, that I held in such high regard, would treat me in the same manner, I didn't know how I was going to wake up the next morning. So what I decided to do was keep it from her. And I don't regret the time I spent with her. I don't regret the times we had. I'm just sorry that I didn't trust her enough. And I'm not a person for cemeteries, but I did go to her gravesite about 3 months after she passed away. And I sat down and I talked. And it's not because I believe that she was there. I don't believe that people exist in dirt. I mean, when we're not here anymore, we're not here. We're somewhere else, but we're just not here. But I needed to get it out of me. I needed to talk to her. And I felt at that particular moment that I was really close to her. And I was able to say all those things about that incident and about that time, and most importantly, about not trusting her enough. You know, I got from that, you know, when we don't say what's in our hearts, we really think we're protecting the other person. That's bullshit. I'm doing it to protect me. I'm doing it to protect me from the look that I think I'm going to see in your eyes when you hear it come out of my mouth. You know, and I was able to get that outside of me. It took me 6 months to really get used to her not being here. I didn't call her or start to call her number or see her and other people. I just missed her a whole hell of a lot. You know, I knew I wasn't going to see her face anymore. And I think one of the biggest problems that, you know, most of us have with grief or grieving is that we like to forget that. We like to jump over that. Like I said before, who wants to deal with loss? Who wants to deal with the idea that one of the most favorite people in my world is not going to be there anymore? You know, about 3 months after that, my mom contracted the same disease. And my mother and I were not close at all. I loved my mother dearly, but she was not my friend. And it took me a long time in recovery to grieve the loss of a mother before she died. I did not have a mother to tell me how beautiful I was and how good I was and what a good adult I would become. I didn't have a mother that would tell me about my period or about boys or sex, you know, or wish for happy things for me with my knowledge. Because if she did, she held that all in. We had a very, very straight, strict form relationship, you know. They provided the house, the clothes, the school, the food. They were good parents. You know, and consequently, I was supposed to love them for it. let me backtrack for a minute. My mother, when she contracted leukemia, when I found out, we weren't talking. And we weren't talking because I came out to her about my life, my sexuality. And it was one of the most horrible experiences I've ever had in my life. It was not at a time that I would have chosen. And her response definitely didn't come off of TV. You know, it was none of that father knows best, and, you know, I didn't even get Roseanne. It was pretty bad. And we weren't speaking. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know if I was ever going to talk to my parents again. But when my mother and father called me to their house to tell me that Mom was sick, I knew that no matter how much anger I had over my treatment, I was not going to miss this opportunity. See, my mother was going to give me something, and I was determined that I was going to sit right by her bed until I got it. You know, she was going to say to me she loved me, that I was important to her. And I was not going to miss it. I didn't care how much anger we had. So that's what I did. For the next year, I went to the hospital. Every time she would say, "Oh, you don't have to do that, honey. You're taking off of work. Aren't they going to be mad at you?" "No, Mom, I'm fine. I have leave. I have a good job. It's okay." You know, we would go through this religiously every single day. Every single day we would go through this. And I would sit there. We wouldn't have much to talk about. My mother was not the kind of person that would talk. But I was determined because I was afraid that if I didn't, then I was going to miss my golden opportunity. See, I'd waited my whole life to hear these words from her. And my mother's dying was not graceful. It wasn't beautiful. It was horrible. It was tragic, and it was terrifying. She was scared of dying. She didn't want to go. She didn't want to believe that she was going anywhere. And all I could do was just sit there. You know, and what started happening is I started talking to my friend and my sponsor and listening in meetings and talking in meetings. And what started awakening in me was that I stopped seeing the mother that I was supposed to have and started seeing the woman that she was. And I realized that maybe nobody ever told her that she was special. Maybe her mother didn't tell her how much she loved her. You know, it became less about me and more about her. And I really believe that that mostly was my gift, was letting her be the way she wanted to be. You know, it would have been real easy for me to tell her how she should die. You know, you should take, you know, you should take, get better care of yourself, read this book, you should go to this class, say this prayer, you know, hold this crystal. But really, the only gift I could give to my mother was letting her be. Because I had never done that for her in my life. And up until I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I had nobody had ever done that for me. See, I found family here. I found loved ones here that knew how to let me be and knew how to love me wherever I was. So I gave that gift to her. And right up until the end, I don't think my mother really believed that she was going to die. And I held on to the bitter end. And it wasn't until right before she drew her last breath that she let me know that she loved me. But I'll be honest with you, I would not have traded that minute, that second, for anything in the world. It's one of the most precious memories I have. And I'm not going to pretend that my mother was a saint. She was who she was. But I know she loved me. When she died, I was fortunate. I didn't have anybody telling me it was going to be all right. I didn't have anybody telling me that, she's in God's hands or any other bull like that. You know, I was lucky. I had people that would just call me and just sit and listen or ask me how I was doing because they really wanted to know. You know, it got so bad that people would ask me at work, you know, how you doing? I tell them, I'm doing horrible. You know, I really don't know how I'm going to take this. You know, I really don't know what's going on. I feel crazy right now. I feel like, you know, and I was telling somebody outside, when I missed my aunt or I missed my mom, I would cry. I didn't care where I was. If I was in my car, I'd cry. If I was at work making a cup of coffee, I'd cry. I'm not going to walk into the bathroom and hide my tears. Why? I'm not doing anything wrong. I love this person, and it was okay for me to show that I love them. You know, and when I encounter people that are going through the process of losing something or someone that they love, I don't try and fill up the space. You know, all that's necessary sometimes is a hug. I just got to let this person know that I care about them and how they feel. I don't have to try and pretend like everything is going to be all right. You know, that's for children. I'm an adult. I'm not afraid of my feelings anymore. Sometimes I don't know what to do with them, you know, but that's okay. I know I can call one of you and we'll find out. Right now, I'm dealing with a loss of not a person, but of a life, mine. I'm not dying. But I've had to change my life drastically in the past month. I was hospitalized with an upper respiratory infection about a month ago. And I was, I almost had respiratory failure. And what the doctors tell me is that I'm very lucky that I don't have permanent lung damage. But I still want to grab a cigarette. I still want to be those couple of hundred people standing outside right now. You know, and I'm not going to pretend like I shouldn't feel like this because that's how I feel. And I'm pissed off that I can't smoke anymore. I'm pissed off I got to change one more thing about my life. Why? Why do I have to change one more time? Why is it always me? Because it's my life. You know, and it's like I keep getting all these answers from people, you know, well, you know, this is for the best, this is for your health, it's good for you. You know, I'm sorry I have to say this. Fuck you. If you're not going to give me a cigarette, keep walking. You know, and I want to live, and I want to be healthy. I do want to grow old. But I'm tired of changing stuff that I'm not ready to change. You know, can you give me a minute and let me decide when I'm ready? And what I'm finding out is this is just one more loss that I have to deal with. You know, this is just one more thing that I have to, I don't have to get used to it. I can go kicking and screaming all I want. It's still going to happen. It's still going to change. If I don't quit smoking, I'll end up back in the hospital, maybe worse. You know, so I don't have to change. Just like I didn't have to stop using. I could have kept going. I can go back out there now if I want. But I know what I'm going to get. Just like I know what I'll get if I pick up the cigarette. You know, that's what keeps me in these rooms. That's what keeps me talking. That's what keeps me connected to my feelings and to you. Because I know what's out there. It's a lot of pain. It's a lot of pretense. And that doesn't hold anything for me anymore. I want something I can touch. You know, I want to live. I want to have a full and happy life in this body right now. So I'm willing to put up with the pain. I'm willing to put up with the loss. Because life is about change, whether I like it or not. It's going to change. Things are going to change whether I like it or not. The only thing I can do is hang on and pray. And I don't have to hang on, dragging, kicking, and screaming. I can walk gracefully. You know, I have people in front of me. I have my aunt, and they have you to show me how. And that's all I'm going to do. I'm just going to do it today. You know, and it's been 2 minutes since I said I wanted a cigarette. So I'm going to wait for 2 minutes more. You know, because that's what y'all taught me. And I'm scared shitless. So if you catch me for the rest of the weekend, be careful if you ask me how are you doing. Because I may tell you. But I know if I meet you and I ask you how you're doing, I want you to tell me. That's the benefit that grief and loss has given me. The desire to connect today, right now. Thanks for letting me share.
I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Anthony.
I'm an addict named Anthony. You know, hi everybody. It's a blessing to be here. You know, like Stephanie, when I'd like to thank the convention committee for asking me to come out and share on this topic. I'm scared to death, so I need to let y'all know that I'm nervous. You know, and when they called me and gave me this topic, you know, I was like, "What the hell do you know about this?" You know, and there's nothing out of order, really, and I believe that there's nothing ever out of order in this fellowship. You know, and I'm grateful today for Narcotics Anonymous. Just a little bit about me, and I'm gonna talk right on the topic. My clean date is December 6, 1993, and I haven't found it necessary to use. Since coming to Narcotics Anonymous, grief and recovery. You know, I'm the oldest of four, and I'm the sole survivor of my entire family. We all used, you know. So I've outlived, and I've put everybody in my family in the ground, if we want to talk about grief and recovery. You know, and all of that took place before I got to Narcotics Anonymous. So you can you can just imagine that my feelings and my emotions and everything was shut down before I got here because it was not to deal with it. And I'm going to go back to that, but I need to talk about getting here today and going into the merchandising room. And that's where I am today with grief and recovery. I went into the merchandising room and went to buy a t-shirt for the gentleman who sponsored me up until I had like 4.5 years in this fellowship. And while I was standing there picking out a t-shirt, you know, I had to stop and think, what size could I get? Because I've watched in the last year this man go from 240 pounds down to maybe 110, you know. And to have to stay, you know, I'm about ready to cry about this. You know, and the process that I have to go through to watch all of this, you know, because see, you know, we all think about grief as having to deal with it after the person has moved on. But I'm dealing with the grief of watching this process take place, you know, and what do I do in the meantime while all of this is going on, you know. Prior to getting here, you know, I could go use, you know. You hurt my feelings if I got upset, you know, and if I didn't want to deal with reality, I could always go to the corner, you know. But since coming to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, it was in these rooms that I began to feel. You know, I've been here for almost 2 years, sitting in the meeting, and tears began to fall, you know, because, you know, my heart was real shut up, you know. So standing there and trying to figure out what size shirt to get. One, because I don't want to hurt the person's feelings. And I don't want to make them feel any worse than what they're feeling. You know, and how do I deal with the pain? You know, so, you know, I thought about how, since being here, you all have told me that I'm never alone, that all I got to do is just tell people how I'm feeling and what's going on, you know. And that's what I began to do, you know, and I've gotten through that. You know, I looked up that word grief and I had to deal with, you know, it just doesn't talk about death and dying. It talks about resentment and it talks about emotional feelings, you know. And how do I deal with the loss, you know, of, like Stephanie talked about, of changing my life, you know. Like I said, I've outlived my family, and since coming to Narcotics Anonymous, what had begun to happen for me was that I began to make friends and get family members right here inside Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And what has begun to happen is that when I hear about your loss, it takes me right back to the moment that I began to experience the loss that took place in my family, you know. And I'm just so glad that I can come here and just share the pain, because y'all told me that shared pain is lessened, you know, if I come here and give it to you people, you know. You know, I go into denial real fast when it comes down to emotions, you know, real fast, because I don't like to hurt and I don't like to feel, you know, and I try not to deal with it. But, you know, what I'm grateful for is that when coming here and dealing with the steps and the sponsorship, you know, everything comes clear and comes into the here and now. You know, I don't know. Yeah, my experience after getting here has been 4 years clean. I had an aunt to die in this fellowship, and what I did was I came here and told y'all. You know, I came here to a meeting, you know, because that's what I had heard. You know, if you come here and tell us, you know, we'll help you through it. We'll walk with you through it. You know. Where I am today, like I said about my family, Joan, who was a speaker tonight, I was one of those people, one of those persons who took her to the cemetery. And the therapeutic value in that was that my brother and sister and my mother in that cemetery, and I have never been to their graves since they died. So taking her to the cemetery helped me begin to deal with the grief process, you know, because that's what I needed to do, you know, because I needed to bring some closure to something that I didn't want to deal with, you know. So, you know, I'm just grateful that I'm beginning to wake up and feel. And it's okay. You know, it is okay. What I found out is that, you know, there's never a right time or a wrong time to deal with grief. You know, there's never the right moment. And we all deal with it in different types of manners and different aspects, you know. But what I've learned today that it's real and it's okay, you know. However I go through it, but what I know is that in the feeling, I can't use. That's the bottom line, is that I can't use. I still come here and I tell you all how I'm feeling, you know. We talk about the, you know, friendships and relationships with people, you know. I'm in the process of grieving a friendship and a relationship that was bounded together, but because of my self-centeredness and self and my inability to be honest a lot of times put a strain in a relationship that means a whole lot to me, you know. And what I've had to deal with the process of just grieving that, you know. And what I do is I keep praying. Thank God that I've got a God of my understanding that I came in here and got because of you people, you know. And I keep praying about that, you know. And it gets better, you know. It gets better, you know. I can only talk about how I've dealt with it since coming to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, because it's because of you people that it's gotten on, you know, dealing with the grief and the loss, you know, has lessened, the pain of it has all lessened, you know. I keep coming in here, like I said, I'm scared to death, yeah. You know, I've had a lot of friends die in this fellowship, you know, and what I've had to do is just come here and give it to you people, you know. And that's what I'm so glad about, is that I don't have to walk through this alone, you know. That's the main thing, because before I got here, that's what I thought I had to do, was just walk through anything that happened in my life by myself, because I had to handle it, you know. When I got here, you know, it was like I couldn't let you see me cry. I couldn't let y'all see me sweat. I had to handle it, and I had to be in control. And what I found out through the steps is that once I begin to let go, you know, and just trust the process, it gets a hell of a lot better. It gets easier, you know. You know, and I can come in here and just let you all hold me, and that was the main thing that I really need to know, you know. Yeah. I don't know where I'm going with this. You know, because, you know, I really don't do a whole lot of talking in front of a lot of people, you know, but this helps me get outside of me, you know, and deal with it, you know. And like tonight, you know, I've had a couple people walk up to me and just tell me, you know, about their loss. And what I found out is that I can empathize and go into their pain with them because I'm willing to express how I feel today, you know, about my loss and my process, you know. And that was so that's been so important and so profound for me in this fellowship, you know. You know, I just thank God that, you know, as I keep the process and walk through this journey, you know, life gets a hell of a lot better for me. You know, I'm not going to keep talking on this topic. We open up the meeting, and anybody who wants to share can come up and share.
Thank you.
I have an ag named Donnie.
Hey, Donnie.
Before we open up the meeting, to those who would like to share, please remember to come up to the microphone one at a time, and keep in mind that there are other addicts who want to share. So if anybody wants to share, you can come up one at a time.
I grew up, my name is Jeffrey, and I'm an addict. And it's true by God's grace and mercy that I stand here clean and relatively serene. I'm sorry I was late for the meeting, Tony, and I enjoyed every bit that I heard so far. This topic, I just stumbled up on this meeting. I just got here from D.C., and, Tony's a good friend of mine, and, we've been in service together, and we attended the same meeting and stuff, and he probably kind of knows where I'm going with this. So anyway, here goes. I came here in October of 93, a couple months before Tony. And Tony's done a lot more service work than I'll ever do. 6 months after I got here, my sister died from complications due to HIV. And at that time, I was in a whole lot of denial about, my ability to stay clean, and reservations, the whole nine yards, And I have to say this for me. My sister wasn't promiscuous, to the best of my knowledge, and she wasn't an IV drug user or nothing of that nature. But she had a real, real stormy life, She attempted to commit suicide, jumped off the Calvert Street Bridge in Washington, D.C., and survived. And years later, she witnessed the death of my brother-in-law, who was shot and killed, coming to her defense. All the while, I'm trying to stay clean. And, my brother-in-law got killed, that night my oldest brother and I was up drinking a fifth of rum, and I slept through it all, I just had like one tragedy after another since I've been in recovery, but I learned something early on, that even though my stepsister died about 3 years ago in a fire. Her and her husband got killed in a fire that was started by her her son, who was trying to cook some French fries one night over on Good Hope Road Southeast. And once again, I'm shocked, where I'm going with this is that grief is part of life, Grief is one of those things for me. You gotta kinda go through it. You can't go over it, you can't go under it. You got to go through it, And that's what I'm trying to do. The process is something that I'm really, really accustomed to, but it don't make it no easy. And what I'm grieving over now is some of my desires and my needs, having to have to let go of a lot of things, I have a sister, my youngest sister, she went to Africa about a month and a half ago, and now she's talking about she want to move there, uproot, take her children with her, and buy a home, and I ain't ready to let go, But she appears to be ready to let go. She don't call no more, and shit like that. And, this just passed December. I have a brother. My brother, my next to the oldest brother, died. And I had just got back from New Orleans. I had never been to New Orleans in my life. Just this past year, a young lady that I met, she took me to California, went to New Orleans. We've been to quite a few places. So here I am coming back from New Orleans in December. By mind you, my birthday is in December, first day of December. So I'm coming home and I'm like, I got this story I'm gonna tell everybody about New Orleans, you know, the Dixieland, Santa Claus, and all this shit. And as soon as I get home that Sunday night, my younger sister, who just came back from Africa, was on the phone, on the voicemail, crying and hollering, hooping, and, you know, telling me that my brother Billy died. I'm like, what? He wasn't even sick. Well, you know, it's just the fact that, you know, I haven't had a relationship with my brother outside of prison for 22 years. You know, he had been incarcerated for 22 years, and he was scheduled to come up for the parole board for the second time this past March, and he didn't make it. And it was a real bitter pill. You know, it's kind of rough, you know. But I feel like, you know, I'm in the right place, and I know there's a lot of people that want to share, and I'm glad y'all are here for me, because I know you're here with me in spirit and nothing else, and I'm out. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Hi everyone, I'm an addict named Michelle.
Michelle.
I want to thank God for 9 days clean. I'm really grateful to be here tonight. It's a long drive from Jersey. It took 5.5 hours. And I drove down with my boyfriend, and we've been going through a lot. You know, grief. You know, I have almost 2.5 years clean, and like, I think the biggest thing for me to grieve was my childhood, you know, because I was molested as a child by my grandfather, and this comes full circle with what's going on in my life today. I don't want to take up a lot of time, but I just need to talk. I need to get this out, because I'm really stuck in my head right now, and I'm in a lot of pain. You know, my boyfriend and I, like, you know, things happen so fast. We've been together for a while, and, you know, I was abused. I was raped 3 times. A lot of stuff happened to me, you know, that was out of my control. And I get into this relationship, and I fell in love, you know. And I don't want to get into exactly what happened, but betrayal sucks, you know. And, you know, he cheated on me. And, you know, he's got a case pending to go to jail because, you know, he was working at a rehab, and, you know, a 17-year-old girl gave him a blowjob for cigarettes. And, you know, we're all addicts and we're all sick, but, you know, he's being looked at like a child molester. And that's just what I went through. You know, and it's come full circle. And, you know, my grandfather committed suicide a couple of years ago. He jumped out of his hospital bedroom and body splattered on the pavement. And, you know, I always felt responsible for all this. Like it was my fault, you know, it was my fault because I didn't say anything. And when I did open my mouth, you know, years later, I felt like I ruined my family. I have a God of my understanding. And God's grace, you know, God forgives me for everything I've done. And, you know, the first time you're a victim, the second time you're a volunteer. And, you know, my sponsor tells me fear and faith can't live in the same house. And that's true for me, you know, because when I'm stuck in the grips of fear that, like, I can't see my way out of this, you know, I don't see the light. And I'm just trapped, you know, and go into the self-pity victim. I'm a victim. I'm a victim. And you know what? I'm not a fucking victim today. Sorry, but I'm not. And just recently, last week, I found out he's been looking at pornography on the internet. And to me, that's a sense of cheating. And this has just brought another smack in the face. And you know, he's getting help because he realized he has a sexual addiction. My sponsor says he has the same disease as my grandfather. My sponsor's a wise woman. She's got 18 years clean. And, you know, she said the lesson for me in this is that, you know, yeah, I'm grieving, and it's painful, and it sucks. But she said, you know, you're able to love someone who is sick like your grandfather, and that, you know, people come into this program and work 12 steps and 12 traditions, but they don't have the spiritual principle of unconditional love. And she goes, and you have courage, and you have that principle of unconditional love. And that, you know, that's all part of grieving. It's like letting that person be exactly where they are, you know, or who they are. You know, I'm going to school to be a doctor. And one of my classes I took last semester, you know, it started the day, our class started on September 11th, and it was death and dying. And it was the most powerful class I ever took, you know. And, you know, there was people grieving all over the campus and everything. And in October was when all this stuff happened with the rehab. So I grieved in my class. It was the most powerful thing, you know, because I don't know these people except in a classroom. And it's like I felt safe, like I was in an NA meeting. Because every Tuesday we'd meet, and these people would just show me love, because all I could do was cry and process and cry and process. And, like, that power of letting people be exactly where they are, like, that is a true gift. And I admire you both for that, you know. And I thank you both for sharing. And I just need to get that out. I'm a grateful addict, and my name is Michelle. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Stan. I'm an addict.
Hey, Stan.
I lost my dad March 7th, and I went to go feed him breakfast at the nursing home, and I found him in his wheelchair in the dining room. He'd passed away. They didn't even know that he passed away. And I didn't have to use over it. I didn't have to use over it. And what I got out of it, people keep asking me, you know, how you doing? You doing all right? And I tell them, I'm doing all right. And the reason I'm doing all right is because, number one, the feelings that I'm feeling, they're just true, normal, healthy feelings. And number two is thanks to Narcotics Anonymous, I had the opportunity to do some step work and make some amends and clean up the wreckage and be the son that I always was supposed to be. And I don't have no baggage of guilt to have to carry around. You know, and if I don't get any more out of this program than that and not using, that's more than I deserve, you know. And I've lost my mother, my aunt, and my father all in recovery. And but I didn't lose my grandmother in recovery. I was using, and I clearly remember, you know, I'd go look at her in the hospital, terminally ill. I'd go out in the parking lot at the hospital, and I'd use. And then I'd come back in. And my mother would say to my sister, where's your brother? And she'd go, well, he went out to the car to get high, and he'll be back in a few minutes. And my mother says, oh, yeah, you're right. You know, and that's what I did. And so I wasn't able to, like, get right about that question, you know. And what happened was when I got clean, I had this older lady. She had 35 years in recovery, and her wreckage of her past, her family still didn't want anything to do with her, you know. And she became like my grandmother, you know. And like, I was there for her for Mother's Day, and I'd come by and see her, and I'd go visit her in the retirement community, you know, and things like that. And that was an opportunity that God gave for me to take and do something to get out of myself. And I got something. It's just like this whole program, you know, is based on. You can't keep what you have unless you give it away. And just by being there for somebody else, you know, I got to get some freedom out of this thing. I've got this, I have a sailboat, and I go out on this sailboat, and there's this place out on the Chesapeake Bay. When I'm out there, I talk to my mother and my grandmother and my aunt, and like every time so far that I've gone out there and done it, while I'm out there talking to them, I'm like a mile, 2 miles away from land, like a butterfly comes and like lands on the sailboat, you know? I mean, it ain't like I'm walking through the woods and a butterfly comes and lands on me. I'm like 2-3 miles out in the water, and a butterfly comes and lands on the sailboat, and you know, you take it for what it's worth, you know? It's worth a lot to me, though, you know? And what I do is I have in my mind's eye, I have these really loving, powerful visual images of all these people that I've lost in my life, and that's where I go. I don't go to the negative, you know, and I believe everybody has some negative. Anybody's been in that, I ain't met nobody yet that's been in any kind of relationship that ain't had some negative experience in that relationship, because I don't believe all relationships are straight up all nothing but peachy creamy, you know. And I got a choice, where do I want to go? You know, and I go to the butterfly, I go to the visual images, you know, of like my father taking me fishing for the first time. You know, I don't go to getting a spanking for getting out of line, you know. And that's how I'm going to get through it, you know. I was laying there sitting on his bed, you know, and my whole prayer to God was, you know, here's your father, he's there dead, you're sitting beside him, and I'm there, God help me. That was it. I don't think I could have kept it any simpler than that, you know. It was God help me. I took my cell phone out, I called my brother up, I told him our daddy died. He said he'll be, asked where I was at the hospital or at the nursing home. I said at the nursing home, he'll come. And I literally just started on A, and I went right through my whole entire phone book and my cell phone, and the phone didn't stop ringing, you know. At the funeral, out of my whole nuclear family, there was no my brother or my two sisters or myself. The largest segment of people there to support any of us at the funeral was me. I had the most people, you know. It was like 20 people from the program, people that I didn't even think, I'm not that close with them, let me put it to you that way, but evidently I'd done something for them, you know, and they showed up, you know, they're, I'm here to support you. So, you know, we don't have to go through this alone. Whatever it is, we just don't have to go through it alone. And thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Shirley, and I'm an addict, and I'm from Fairfax. My grief is really fresh. I lost my mother 2 days ago. I've got 7 months clean. And I saw my mother before she died. And she wasn't responsive. I mean, she wasn't opening her eyes. But I sang to her, and I prayed to her, and I held her hand. And when I went in the hospital room, there was such a peace in that room. And my counselor told me I hadn't seen my mother in a year, because of my using. And my counselor told me that she held on long enough to see me. So my family knew I was coming here. I've never gotten so much love and so many hugs in this program. And I just want to thank everybody. Thanks for letting me share.
I'm an addict named Wayne. Last year in March, I lost one of my sons. And, you know, I remember, I've been in Narcotics Anonymous since October 1994. I remember hearing people share about losing their parents, losing their sisters or their brothers. And when I lost my son, right, it felt like a hole. Something was missing. And my son was, he was 19 years old. He was going to school to be a school teacher. And when he told me that he wanted to be a school teacher, I was so amazed and I was so proud of him. You know, I was like, you want to be a school teacher? And he was shot, and I was at work, and they called me at work. And I had like six sons and one daughter when I came in Narcotics Anonymous, and I always talked about my six sons. And I thought I was going to always have six sons. And when I went to the hospital, they wouldn't let us see him. And when they did let me in the room, he was just so still that I knew he wasn't there. And the doctors were saying, you know, like that they were going to do more work on him. And he didn't make it. And I watched the blood come out of my son, and I watched him slip away. And, you know, like I remember like being in relationships, you know, and like saying that my heart was broken, you know, but what I found out was that losing my son, my heart, that's a real heartbreak right there, you know. And like even like today, you know, like I don't think that my heart is going to get back together from this. My son was shot, taken up for his youngest brother, and his youngest brother was 16. And he was out around 11:30 at night, and this guy said to him, young buck, what you're doing out this late, you know? And my son said he was going to get his brother to run him home, and that's what he did. And in the process of that, he told his brother what had happened. And my son that got shot, he didn't stay home. He went back in the neighborhood, and he saw the guy, and they knew each other. And he told my son, he said, yeah, this young guy, I was just getting ready to smash this young guy for getting smart with me. And my son said, you know, well, what did he have on? And he described his younger brother. And my son told him, well, you got to beef with my brother. You got to take it up with me. And that's what happened. And the next day after we came from the hospital, my youngest son came in the room, and he said, Mom, it's my fault why Montague is dead. And I said to him, I said, you know, well, you know, like, Wynn, what are you talking about? And when he explained it to me, I gave him a hug, and I told him that it wasn't his fault. I told him, you know, that the guy just didn't like his brother, that he had something against him. And, like, I know that if it was not for the program of Narcotics Anonymous and for people being here prior to my experience, I would not have been there for my family. I would have been out using, you know. A year before my son was shot, I was running into, like, people who had lost their children. You know, I ran into a girlfriend of mine's and her daughter, her only daughter was shot. I met a lady who two daughters were killed in a fire. And I met another lady whose son was killed. And what I had got in touch with was that God had allowed me to meet these people prior to this happening to me, that I would have somebody to talk to. You know, when my son was pronounced dead, you know, I couldn't understand it. You know, I was saying, something good got to come out of this, you know, because my son was only 19. My son was a good-looking kid. One guy told me that he was the best ball player he ever seen. So I was like, you know, something good has got to come out of this. And, you know, people were looking at me like I was crazy, but that was the only thing that came to my mind. And at my son's funeral, 28 people were saved. So I understood, you know, like why that was pressed in my spirit. I've had thoughts of committing suicide. I didn't want to live without my son. One of my other sons tried to hang himself. My other son tried to commit suicide. Even today, you know, like I worry about my family members. I worry about my children, the grief of missing a brother. You know, through it all, using has never occurred to me. You know, that is not an option at all. It's not going to bring my son back. You know, But I know that having this program in my life and having this fellowship, you know, that has given me the strength and the courage to go through life on life terms, you know, like that I'm going to make it through. When March rolled around this year, I didn't think I was going to make it, you know, and I came in the rooms and I shared about it. You know, I was sharing, I don't think I'm going to make it through this one. You know, I've been through my husband getting killed in 96, my sister dying the day before my birthday, you know, and I made it through that. You know, so I looked on those things, you know, like to understand that I'm going to make it through this one too, you know, a day at a time. I really got a lot from you sharing because I was able to identify with a lot of things that you said. My mother passed away May of last year, and I wasn't close to my mother at all. And I always had a question that I wanted to ask my mother. First of all, she named me Wayne, you know, and I couldn't understand. I'm like, you know. She named me Wayne Shirley, you know, so I'm like, she could have named me Shirley Wayne, you know, like, what's up with that, you know? And I, you know, I don't ever remember my mother saying to me that she loved me. And when I found out, we found out that she had cancer of the pancreas, that she didn't, the doctor said she may have like 2 months to live, no more than 2 months. I didn't believe it because my mom was always strong. And she was 82. And I remember going over to her house and saying to her, Mom, why you don't love me? You know? And then, like, I remember feeling guilty about that, you know, but I wanted an answer to that. And the response that she gave me was like, oh, Wayne, leave me alone, you know? And I felt really guilty about that. So much that about the next 5 days, I didn't go over to see her, and her health deteriorated more and more. And my younger sister told me that my mother was asking for me, that she was calling for me. And, you know, like, I wish that I had the courage, like you had, this, you know, like, to go in spite of my feelings. But what my higher power has allowed me to get in touch with and have given me peace with this was that it was something that she may have wanted to say to me, and I truly believe that at that time that it was going to be an amends made. So, you know, like, I'm at peace with that. There's nothing I can do about it anyway. You know, I just know that that, you know, that we don't know, like, what's going to happen, you know, like, the next minute, you know, or, you know, tomorrow. But one thing that I found out through Death and Recovery is that we don't have to use at all. Thanks for letting me share.
We are out of time. We're out of time.